Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Soleria Report, a special treat. I'm in Sweden, and I'm here with Jacob Nordegard, who you have met before on the Soleria Report. He is an exceptional, well, he was on his way to being a highly successful professor, associate professor at a Swedish university and onto a great career of academic success until the pandemic came and he decided to tell the truth. And among other things, published an absolutely outstanding book on the Rockefellers, which some of you have, the Rockefeller Syndicate. And I've warned you about my deep family connections.
Exactly. Syndicate.
And I can affirm that your research is quite credible and quite excellent. He also has some other books we're going to be talking about today. And he was nice enough, because I'm in Sweden, to come all the way to interview. You're going to be speaking at our conference on Guard for the Liberty of Mankind, and you're going to be part of the governance track, and we're looking forward to hearing from you on Saturday. And you can...
Well, actually, it's the media and Intel group.
Oh, you're going to be in media.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, Jacob, welcome.
Yeah.
And I just want to say it's really, it was a very good response from having you on the Soleria Report. We're delighted to have you back. I'm very excited. Skyhorse is bringing out the Rockefeller book. So you don't have to mail it all the way from Sweden.
No, exactly.
It will be in all the stores. When is it coming out?
November 28th.
November 28th.
Yeah, and it's possible to pre-order it now.
Yeah. Okay, so great for Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah. This
exactly.
is the perfect Christmas
so
present.
So even if you have the first edition, you can buy another one and give away.
Right. Yeah. So here's the thing. If you have a loved one who wants to know who is Mr. Global, this is the perfect Christmas present.
Yeah.
There you go. Mm. Okay. But you have another book coming out, which I am a big fan of. I've read an advanced copy called Global Coup d'Etat.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit. That will be available in April, also from Skyhorse.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about Global Coup d'Etat, what it's about.
Well, the thing is, when I had written Rockefeller, I mean, it was about a society they wanted to create. Mm-hmm. The finishing chapter about the fourth industrial revolution and everything.
And a technocracy. A technocracy.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
That's what it is. And then the pandemic came. And I just immediately thought, okay, this is the trigger. Mm-hmm. This is a triggering event to push this technocracy through. So I started to immediately make research about what's the background to this. Because, I mean, in the Rockefeller book, I was very into the climate issue.
Right.
Because I've written a lot about energy and climate politics. I hadn't been into health, but I knew from reading all these annual reports from the Rockefeller Foundation and so on. And also, I mean, if you are kind of well-educated, you know that the Rockefellers have had a lot of influence on
right.
the health agenda. So it was very easy for me, just, okay, I have read these reports, I know where to find information. So fairly fast I could put the big picture together.
Right.
And how this had started and all the health agenda and so I read a lot from the Rockefeller Foundation, but also from Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It's a lot about the foundation's big control of the agenda and how they achieved this. So I was investigating from because I had read a report from the Rockefeller School for Special Studies Project that in the 50s talk about how could we achieve a new world order.
Mm-hmm.
One way was through environmental policy, the climate. We talked specifically about oceanography and meteorology. But we also said, when we have global health, and pandemics and so on, I mean, that's crosses borders. That's a problem that needs to be solved through international cooperation. That could be a thing for if we want to have a world government. So that's where it started in my book. So and also we also have this with the Rockefellers from beginning with the League of Nations.
Right.
And we have the Spanish flu, and we have the Rockefeller Institute of Medical Research, and that's very early on. So I mean, they have been very, very prepared for this. But it's like they decided in the 50s that this is the way we will achieve this, and
right.
Then they started to really work on it.
Right.
And then at the more or less like year 2000, when we have Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation taking over that agenda and being the...
And maybe not taking over,
no,
fronting.
No, not take over.
Fronting.
Yeah. Fronting. Yeah, exactly. Because they, I mean, the Rockefellers, they have laid the foundation. And Bill was
right.
Perfect to take the role, and also had a lot of money through Microsoft put in this. So that's and
well, if you look at the relationships between the government and the Microsoft and various other things, it's not clear to me the money's really coming from Bill. So I was thinking this morning as I was preparing for talking with you, I was thinking of a story that Patrick Wood told about the Rio conference. I think it was 1994.
92.
92.
Yeah.
And there were two environmentalists who went down thinking that they were going to a conference where they were going to learn about how we protect the environment and do a better job of caring for the environment. And what they realized was they were looking at the plans to roll out technocracy, and they thought, oh, these guys are going to, you know, are basically moving to assert control of all the assets in the world.
Yeah.
And they couldn't believe how ambitious it was, but they left, you know, wrote a book. But if you look at the plans they were talking about in 92 to roll out to basically control resources, I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah,
it's a resource control plan. If you go back and your book does a very good job of documenting this, you know, as soon as the Rockefellers got the Federal Reserve in place, they went to work on, okay, well, this will control through the financial side, but we're going to need a plan to control through the asset side. And they literally went to work to figure out how you assert technocratic control of every line of of resources, health,
yeah,
energy, food, you know, and it's quite, you know, and it's funny. I want to tell you another story that I was thinking about when I was thinking about what we're going to talk about. When I was on Wall Street, and I was trained by that syndicate, I was very deep in their training. And one of the things they believed in was planning. And they regularly planned for longer than their lifetime. You know, their attitude was, you know, great people build cathedrals. It takes longer than a human lifetime. And you plan for, you know, builders of civilization plan for very long increments. So I remember I was
centuries.
Centuries. Mm-hmm. We would plan in century. And so I'm headed out to Detroit, and the plane hits a bump and goes into a nosedive. And the stewardess, who I did not realize at that time, it was her first day on the job full time, lets out and screams, "We're all going to die." And the first thing that came into my mind, you know what it was?
Oh.
I need a plan. And then I realized, oh, there's no plan. You know, plans won't work here. But that's the way we were trained. We were trained that any challenge of civilization or any building of civilization, you started with a plan. And one of the reasons I love the Rockefeller book is it, you know, the research is very meticulous. And most people don't do this kind of very meticulous research because it's unbelievably hard. You have to go through a lot of very deadening documents to get this. And but you lay out their plans they started right after they got the Federal Reserve, and they've been planning this for a century.
Yes.
Right.
We have.
Right.
And they stick to the plan.
Right. That's, but, you know, if you tell somebody that, they don't believe it. But when they read your Rockefeller book, it's so documented. Mm. It's so thorough. Mm. And I remember the gentleman who introduced us said, you got to meet this guy. Wait till you see what he's done for the laying out. And that's how you see how the climate change operation was really created and engineered and built over decades.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I mean, and I had this methodology I've been doing actor studies, actor network studies. That was what I was
trained. What's an actor network?
Actor network theory. I mean, it's you study
what who acts.
The actors.
Right.
Who defines the agenda?
Right.
Who put the problem on the table?
Right.
And follow these right. actors historically.
And what you see is it's the people who make the plans and do the work.
Yeah.
And in the case of the Rockefellers, their advantage was they printed the money too. And so money is no object,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Because you control the central bank.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's perfect.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you first circulated the Rockefellers, both in Swedish and English, because you were selling it from here in Sweden, what was the response?
Well,
other than getting you thrown out of academia,
I mean, some people loved it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's people that are have an open mind and are curious and want to know about how power works and operates.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not popular at academia because it's like it's taboo to discuss who really runs the show.
Well, the foundations are big funders.
Yeah, they are.
They're big funders.
And the thing is, when I did my PhD, I defended my doctoral thesis in 2012, in December 2012. And when my opponent, he said when he started, because he had this, he talked a bit about my what was in my thesis. And he said something about the Rockefeller Foundation. And then he just said to me, you know, the institution that I work on in Lund, Sweden, we just received a grant from the Rockefeller Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the same in, especially I was in Stockholm University a couple of years ago. And it was the same, it was very much Rockefeller money.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And from the beginning, they were actually building up a lot of the social sciences
right.
in Sweden.
Right.
And when I found out, it was just, well, okay, I understand now why it's so difficult to say something about this agenda.
Right.
Because, I mean...
So if you part of the planning is basically networking financially the different institutions and building their loyalties to your plan.
Yeah, it
and,
is.
And it goes on for years and years and years.
Yeah.
Right.
And you want that money. Of course, well, I mean.
You know, here's the funny thing.
Mm.
I remember at one point I had my company in Washington, we had a deal with the Department of Labor where they paid 55%, we paid 45%. And we were looking at pension funds, the study of all the pension funds and how they were dealing with non-financial criteria. And we decided it was a 3-year deal. And after 2 years, we had an option to renew or not. And we decided it was cheaper to pay 100% ourselves because it was so difficult dealing with their political issues
yeah.
that we just said, you know,
no,
we'd rather pay 100% as cheaper.
Yeah.
Right. So... So no, I think for many people who are interested in the truth, it's that money comes, that's very expensive money because it puts so many strictures. Okay, so Global Coup d'Etat had many delicious treats in it. I don't know if you remember, one of my favorite part was the appendix.
Yes, I know.
You had a very interesting letter from it was from a chapter of some group associated with the UN. And they had made a proposal which was not adopted. I think it was at the 92 conference. It was one of those conferences. Could you remember what it was and could you tell us about it?
What's the thing, in the appendix?
It was in the appendix, and it was a letter, I thought it was from the Iowa chapter, and it was about putting in a quota system for depopulation.
Yes, because the appendix, one appendix is about more or less, it's about the Rees Commission.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And how we build up the education system.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this New Order of the Barbarians.
Mm-hmm.
Could be that one.
Yeah.
The New Order of the Barbarians. But that talks about, it was a plan what that was kind of, I think it was in 1968 or 1969, and it was a doctor, medical doctor, that talked in front of other medical doctors, and he came up with and told about future events, and he had been he was from the Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
Mm? So he knew a lot about and talked about an agenda what were about to be rolled out.
Right.
And talked about, and it's very scary to read this, because one of the doctors that were attending this, that had this presentation, he said, you can take any notes. I just want to tell you about these things. We are ready. We are rolling it out. You can do anything.
Right.
But I'm going to tell what's going to happen. So, but one of them, he had this photographic memory. So he could just, he's like a Tesla, Nikola Tesla, with this mind. He just could put it in a box in his head, and then afterwards he just could write down everything. So he did that, and he gave an interview about this later. But it was just astonishing to hear what he said during this.
So when I think Global Coup does a very good job of collecting all the different, you know, because if you're going to control the planet, you want to control all the different cartels. So you got to control health, you got to control food, you got to and you aggregate it and integrate it in a way that I think is very, very useful.
Yeah.
But wait, there's more. You got a third book coming out after that.
Yes.
Right? Now it's already out in Swedish, but it's not available yet in English.
Yeah,
tell us about that.
Yeah, it will be in Sweden. It's den digitala världshjärnan. Mm-hmm. In English, it's the digital world brain, and it's about the future agenda. What I did was during the pandemic, United Nations, they had a meeting, because United Nations in 2020 they turned 75.
Right.
So, and if you remember, 2020, we had Klaus Schwab declaring the Great Reset. He wasn't the only one.
Mm-hmm.
Antonio Guterres,
mm-hmm.
the Secretary General, was at the same meeting declaring the Great Reset as well. And then we had now King Charles III. It was these three people. and a couple of months later, United Nations had this meeting about how we have a problem with this pandemic. Our institutions are not fit anymore for these global challenges. We have to upgrade them. So in this meeting, they talked about the global governance structure for the mm-hmm. future. And during the General Assembly that year, the member states asked Antonio Guterres for a report about the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Our Common Agenda. And so because of the pandemic, they needed that report. So what I've been doing is, the report came out 1 year later. So I have gone through this report because it has 12 commitments in it on how to achieve the Agenda 2030. Mm-hmm. So I went through and read all this this report and all the background material and to understand what they had in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it was kind of a system that I already knew that they
total
wanted.
Total control.
More or less.
Right.
I mean, it's the fourth industrial revolution, the technocracy. That's what United Nations
wanted
to choose.
It's technocracy, but it's total. You know, when I say total control, we tend to think of, you know, authoritarian regimes in the past that had physical control. Now we're talking about people who think they have a right to invade your body. So, for example, there's a major lawsuit in the United States called Missouri versus Biden. The Missouri Attorney General has sued the White House for interfering with social media and interfering with free speech. And in the defense by the Department of Justice, one of the agencies of the U.S. government took the position that the minds of Americans are part of critical national security infrastructure, and they have jurisdiction over people's minds and what they think and what they feel and what they believe. That's national security infrastructure.
Yeah.
So you're not yourself anymore. You're just part of their infrastructure.
Yes.
They literally
exactly.
believe
yeah,
this.
Yeah, it is.
Right.
Yeah, it is.
Right.
And that's the UN agenda
right.
as well.
Right.
And it's about digitizing everything, collecting data about everything and analyze it with AI.
Right, but digitizing us.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
They have to.
Right.
And follow us everywhere. And I mean, and they are doing it for a long time now, but they just want to upgrade the system for it.
I think it's, you know, one of the reasons I keep emphasizing this, I think it's very hard for healthy people to fathom that anybody would want to do this.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's so important to, you know, to lay out the kind of planning they've done in meticulous detail to see they're working hard at implementing this.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just to download these documents. They are there. I mean, it's no secret.
They don't keep it a secret.
No secrets at
right.
all. But, I mean, it's not like they tell you this on television. And like they had this meeting in United Nations in 2020. It wasn't, nobody would talk about it. When the Our Common Agenda report was out, it wasn't reported anywhere. I think the only thing, I mean, and if you go out in the streets and ask people, 1,000 people, do you know about Our Common Agenda? How many will say, I know?
Zero.
Zero, I think.
Zero.
I think you have
right.
to have like 10,000 or more people.
Right.
I mean, it's like people that are involved in the United Nations, maybe, or in government. They might know
right.
something about it. But I guess some people in government they don't know that either. But so I mean it's like okay, every information is out there. You can just go into United Nations web pages. You can watch their YouTube films and everything. And it's
we just put up a website and a collection. We took over 50. Videos on CBDC, but shorties, you know, 1 to 3 minutes. Most of them, we have some long ones, but it's basically 50 1 to 3 minute videos on financial control that shows you everything. And it's, they're saying it.
Yeah.
Right. Mm. So it's very, very clear. And I did one interview this morning with a wonderful reporter over in Oslo, and I had her watch 2 55-second videos that said it all.
Mm.
And it just, so I said, just put those in the interview. And, you know, this is not me saying it. It's the head of the BIS.
Yeah.
And exactly. a president of one of the Federal Reserve Banks saying, explaining exactly
how it works. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they do.
Well,
that's
interestingly, the president, you know, the president of the Fed Bank in the U.S. is saying, I can't fathom why Americans would let this happen. He said, I understand why China wants it because it's total control. But why would we ever let this happen in the United States? That's the president of FedBank.
Yeah.
That's how bad it is.
It is.
Anyway, it's quite extraordinary. Anyway, but the you know, so but it's true, they are saying this, and a lot of the documentation is available. I don't know if you saw this at the G20 meeting that they just had in India.
Yes.
The Indian finance minister comes out with a G20 declaration, which includes Russia and China and all of the
BRICS.
Mm. Right. And they totally embrace private central banks in the document. And then they list at the agreements that are incorporated in the document on page 30 and 31, you know, 20 or 30 documents by the BIS and the Financial Stability Board at the BIS on the whole financial control agenda. And it's like, really? You think think the BRICS are breaking away?
The thing is, I mean, it was in India, a BRICS country. Next year it's Brazil, G20. And the year after that, it's in South Africa. And the G20, they are led by a troika. And that's the previous chair, and the chair, and the coming chair.
Right.
So now it's more or less, it's the BRICS that is
the BRICS are
running this. And if you go into G20, I mean they call it the Economic Security Council. That's what they proposed from the beginning. It's all about financial control.
So here's what was interesting at the UN General Assembly just met.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of interesting things happening. One is Gutierrez complaining that the SDGs were only 12% on track. Yeah. Which was okay. Something's working, right? Do you have any comment on that? Sounds like good news.
But 12% would work.
He said only 12% are on schedule.
On track, yeah.
Yeah. So that means 88%
are not on track.
Yeah,
because and that's how they operate all the time. Because this isn't working as it should, we need more power and control to make it work.
Right.
So that's the whole thing.
Okay, so the other thing is 11 countries refused to go along with the IHR amendments.
Yes.
So he just declared them passed when they weren't passed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did
exactly.
he? Exactly. Right, so all the implication is we don't need the membership's approval to approve this. No. We're just going to do it.
Because it's like they have already decided what they want to do. And they are going to have this meeting next year, Summit of the Future. And that's and then they want to sign this Leaders Pact for the Future. I think that's the scary thing. So now they are just heading into this, and it's so important for them to have everything ready to and also they talk about I've read a lot about the Club of Rome and because they are lobbying this. They are very involved in a lot of these groupings.
We just did an interview at the Salary Report with a systems engineer named Charlie Stevens, and it's a three-part series. And Charlie has spent his whole life trying to unpack, okay, if you were going to run the planet by the most efficient energy policy, what would it be? And how would you do it? And that brings up the question, of course, where is the waste going? Why is the system so energy wasteful?
Mm.
And he came out with his read of what's causing all the problems and how you solve any problem. So if there's a nitrogen problem, how you solve the nitrogen problem. And here's what Charlie said. He said, the number one problem in terms of energy or environmental damage is what he calls the rackets, which is his nickname for Mr. Global and Organized Crime.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And he's got all these stories of innovations where we could have dramatically reduced energy use and this and that and this and that and this and that. That are stopped because whatever it is making money for the guys at the very top, the rackets, right?
Yeah.
Of which the Rockefellers are one of the leading examples of the rackets. Okay. So number one is the rackets. Number two, he says, is if we could evolve, and you have to do the evolution carefully from industrial agriculture to regenerative, you know, But he does say the rackets include war. You know, the F-35s use a lot more, you know, create a lot more, you know, environmental problems than cows. So cows, cows could be part of the solution.
Yeah.
So we've got the, you know, get rid of war and organized crime. Then we've got the evolution of regenerative. And then he says technology could increase productivity, but it's not. It's basically being used to institute control and technocracy.
Yeah, it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then he goes from there. Then he says a lot of it is stopping innovation or optimization of energy policy. So, and then, you know, he goes on from there. But the number one problem is the rackets.
Yeah, it is.
And
they are the ones that are coming up with solutions. So,
right. So and climate
defining
change,
the problems and they're coming up with solutions.
Right. And so climate change literally is an op.
Yeah.
To keep the rackets protected and going. And the solutions they're coming up with to deal with climate change basically are you know, basically keeping the rackets going. And one thing that helps the rackets keep going is total control.
Yeah.
Right. Mm. Right.
Because that's power. That's what they crave for as well.
Well, but I think it's also risk management because I think if you've been doing the rackets, but you put out powerful information technology where people can... You know, if you look at the research you've done, doing that research without the internet would have been very, very hard.
It had.
So the information technology is speeding up our learning metabolism. How are they going to keep control? Because if we get transparency of what's going on, their legal liabilities are enormous. There is no statute of limitations. So let me give you an example of the legal liability problems. If you read David Talbot's book on the Kennedy assassination, and I think it's one of the two best books on the Kennedy assassination, it's called The Devil's Chessboard, and it's basically a biography of Alan Dulles, who was the project manager on the Kennedy assassination. But he basically ties it back right into the board of the Rockefeller Foundation.
Yeah.
You know, and basically... You know, it's David and the Klan at through the board at Williamsburg giving the final approval on the assassination.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. Okay. Now, there's no statute of limitations on murder. Right?
Mm.
And that was 63. And since then, there have been a lot of murders, and there's no statute of limitations. And if you take government-owned and financed technology and give it to a corporation... You know, they may either have branding problems or they may owe some equity back, right? I mean, there's $21 trillion missing from the federal government. That $21 trillion financed assets and the ownership certificate can revert, right?
Mm.
So there's enormous legal liabilities to, and control solves those problems.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So. You've written these three books. They're circulating, and they'll continue to circulate as the English come out through Skyhorse. What do you think? I know you're out, and you're speaking to a global audience, and you're speaking in Europe. What's been the feedback as you've published these things, as you talk and teach? I mean, you're still a professor, in my mind. You're still teaching.
Yeah.
Right.
I couldn't work as one. Course in Sweden.
You can't work at a university as a professor.
You have to have my own research institution. I mean, that's what I've done.
Right.
So now I'm an independent researcher live from my books.
But people are getting educated. So what's the feedback?
I think I have had a great feedback. And
right.
Lots of people that has got back to me and they are very grateful for the work I'm doing. I mean, it's very few people that has come up with bad things to say. It's more the people that are afraid, that are on the academic in the academic world.
Mm-hmm.
They could be, and they, for the most part, they haven't read it. They haven't read the book. It's
right.
Just no. I'm not going to read that. I know what it is. I know that this just bullshit or whatever.
Right.
But I haven't met one that had really read the Rockefeller book.
But you've also connected with researchers around the world.
Yes.
So has that been gratifying?
Yes, I mean, I have lots of valuable contacts all over the world now.
Right.
And with people that have found out similar things. So I mean, it's like now we're forming a new invisible college, you can say.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, academia is so infiltrated. It's so, I mean, it's they just, it's such stupid things that are, I mean, the woke agenda.
Well, but here's the thing. Once you break free of trying to get along, your learning speed skyrockets because you're networking with other people who really want to know and they're sharing. You know, I find most people to be highly collaborative. And so, you know, you're getting together with big brains all over the world and some pretty exciting things are happening.
Yeah, it is. So it's a very exciting time. So.
Yeah.
And so, I think it's they who should be scared now because, I mean, as you said, I mean, it's a, we have this, with information technology, with this, we have this world brain with information. And if you only, if you know where to search, you can find everything.
Right, but I think we should say all to them, you know, we're having more fun over here. You ought to come try it.
Exactly.
Time to switch sides. There's an alternative now, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And I feel that's what's going to happen eventually.
Right.
More people.
A lot of people are breaking away and coming over.
Yeah.
You know, because they saw their little piece, they didn't see the whole picture. The more they see the whole picture, they're like, mm-mm.
And understand, and the more people that are starting to talk about it, it's more, before it was, I know some lunatic that talks about this influential networks. It's nothing it's right. Not to how it works, it really works. And, but now it's, I hear it from that side and from that person and from that, and that's suddenly, okay, it's maybe there is something with this. So, yeah.
So I had one guy, he's really funny, post at Solari, you know, we get the most amazing intelligence coming into us. And he said, he started, I don't know, it was way back, he said, you know, I listened to you explain about the missing money and I said, she's crazy. And then, you know, time went by and I realized, oh no, she's not crazy, it's real. So I subscribed. And then I listened to you talking about the global spring and I realized, she's crazy. And I unsubscribed. And then I realized, oh no, it was a couple years later, it's real. So I came back. Yeah. So he described leaving and coming back and leaving and coming back. And he had just come back for, I think, the fourth time. And one of our really intelligent subscribers, he's a retired farmer in the heartland, posted a very detailed comment about tornadoes coming down the highway and being steered to only demolish selected farms. So they would only, it would go down, demolish the organic farm, go down past the industrial farm, steer, destroy the organic farm, turn, and literally, because it's in Kansas. Kansas is very much, you know, it's like the highways. It's very square.
Yeah.
Okay. And so this guy says, you know, I just got back because I realized you're right about this. He said, but I'm reading this guy's post and, you know, you all are crazy. And I'm leaving. So he unsubscribed again. And several of the commentators posted, don't worry, he'll be back. But you know, there's that dynamic.
Yeah,
is happening, it's accelerating. People are, you know, it's a critical mass. Okay, so you're at the conference. We have an incredible group of people gathered. What are you hoping to accomplish here?
Well, I mean, the thing is, people are coming together, and that's the. I don't know what kind of hopes I have with it. It's just so exciting to find people and start talking and it's like an organic thing.
Yes.
It's something is growing out of it. So I'm I don't want to think about what I want. It's more like okay, what will this give me?
What will emerge?
I mean, well, he emerged from it.
I keep quoting this. There's a doctor who started a group in Switzerland that's helping people have been harmed by COVID. And he said, the currency of the future will be relationships of trust.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's my hope for this conference is, you know, that a lot of the relationships will either get started or will grow, because it's through those relationships that amazing things happen.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I believe we have a kind of a helping force that comes in critical times. And I think we will have it.
So I had an ally who used to quote, she would talk about something called Jatino, a Brazilian term, the magic that comes in dangerous times.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's really good.
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay, well, anything you can tell us about what you're going to be up to in the next year other than pushing out translations?
Well, I will we'll go to Paris next month.
Oh, really?
Because I also have a French publisher that has published the Rockefeller book in French.
Okay.
So that's a totally new audience for me.
How long will you be in Paris?
It isn't decided yet.
Okay.
So we are working out the details now.
Okay, I'll be there in December. So it sounds like I'll miss you. But
Yeah.
Mm.
And I mean, of course, and then there's the Skyhorse release in
are November. You going to do a book tour?
Don't know yet.
Okay.
If I get invited to do so, but I think it will be much more international for me because the latest years I've been doing a lot of work in Sweden. I had been traveling around and giving speeches everywhere to whoever wants to listen to me. So it has been more or less building something, a more real grassroots movement with people. So now I want to go more in the international arena.
Well, it's appropriate that you should lecture about the Rockefeller book in New York, right?
Yeah, it is. I think it's everywhere. What country on this planet hasn't been affected by the Rockefeller Foundation?
All of them.
They have been everywhere, and if you read the annual reports, I mean, you can see every university that they have given money to. I mean, it's everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So since you've studied the sort of the planning and the syndicates, if you're listening to this, what if somebody said, okay, given what you've now learned, what you know about how it all works, what can I do? What can one person do?
Well, it's knowledge. It's spreading knowledge.
Right.
If you know, I mean, it was that for me. When I found out about these things, it's just, I can't shut up. I have to speak out. I mean, and you can influence one person or two.
Right.
You don't have to change the whole world. You can just spread this.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think if you look at what we're trying to do, we're trying to change a system which is very old.
Yeah.
And so it affects everything. Mm-hmm. And it's the reinvention of everything. And so it has to change at an intimate level.
Yeah.
And that, you know, and that's why the relationships of trust are so important. Mm-hmm. Because that's how change happens.
Yeah.
You know, people who trust each other get together and they take action and they do something, and the next thing you know, the town has its own energy supply.
And it's wonderful because it also gives meaning to people.
Right.
Because one thing that I feel with this agenda, with this digitization of everything, automation, and it's just get rid of people and get rid of people, have a meaning for people.
Right.
We are supposed to play video games and take drugs, like Harari said. But I don't think so. I think we can do wonderful things. And if we come together and can create things, it will affect us in a way that we feel better as well.
Right.
And I think everyone wants to be in that team.
Yeah.
They don't want to be in a team that we are nobody. We are worthless. We are just a waste for society.
Well, that's why once you understand where they really want to go, I mean, that's why when people say, well, what are our chances? And I would say, you know, our chances there is zero. So come on, let's go.
Yeah.
You know, they're better over here, whatever they are.
Yeah. And it's a humane world. their world isn't humane. It's just.
It's just resource rich for now.
Yeah, they have all the resources. Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It's like Getty. You know Getty, the billionaire, who's was his grandson, but he was kidnapped in Italy by the some mafia.
Yeah.
And he, the very rich grandfather, he didn't want to give anything away of his fortune. He just wanted to sit there with his oil paintings and everything that he has, but nothing for his grandson. And but he sat there in his castle alone.
So now that you've finished the third book, are you doing research?
I'm doing research all the time.
so what is your research now?
It's a lot about, I mean, I follow the G20 process. And I also follow up what's happening with our common agenda. We have had this policy brief that's been published the latest months. So I go through this and we have.
Now, are you publishing any of this in English? So
yeah,
if we come to
I have a Substack. So
okay, so if we sign up for your Substack.
So almost everything I do now is in English.
Right.
I have a. The Swedish audience is very small, so I'm more into writing directly in English and publish it. So,
right.
So my Substack
Sweden is 10 million. The English speaking world is a billion.
Yeah.
Right. There
course.
You go.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
So we can find you on Substack.
Yeah.
Is that where everyone should go?
Yes.
Yeah. And is there a name on your?
Find every information if I have some event or things that I'm doing.
So we'll put up a link.
Yeah.
We'll put up a link. Yeah. Okay, well, Jacob, I'm so glad you're here. I look forward to the next couple of days. Any other thing you'd like to tell our audience before we go to?
No, not really. I think it's just wonderful to sit here with you and talk for real. Because the last time we did, we just had a screen. And that's so... one misses so much of this.
Well, can I say we're in a castle and it's beautiful in Sweden and the fabulous land and so I don't often get to spend the night in the castle, so
it's great.
Our team can have a resource rich moment, right?
Yeah.
Right. Mm. Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us on this Lear Report. Ladies and gentlemen, have a wonderful day. And again, oftentimes I end this way. Don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in one, now would be a good time to start one. Right?
Yeah.
Jacob and I are in a conspiracy. Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Have a wonderful evening.
Yeah. Thank you.